The social networking service Twitter has a lot of social credit, but not necessarily a lot of money. We're talking here, of course, about the internet service that allows for short 140-character messages, or tweets, as they're called. And despite being extraordinarily famous now, the company is not making any money, which has not deterred investors. NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports on just how enthusiastic those investors are about Twitter.
A group of investors is reportedly about to give Twitter as much as $100 million in new funding. But what has people talking is that the deal values Twitter at $1 billion. Investors are betting that the internet's fastest-growing social networking site will turn into a financial powerhouse. Analyst Rob Enderle isn't convinced and says the investment reminds him of the craziness of the dot-com era.
Imprudent would be putting it lightly. There is no proof that they can ever reach profitability in line with a $1 billion valuation.
Analyst Mark Mahaney of Citigroup is also skeptical. He notes that while Facebook has finally turned a profit, there's no way to know if Twitter can match that.
If people decide they no longer want to use Twitter and they want to use something else, then Twitter can be an overnight sensation that's gone when the morning comes.
So far, Twitter has had no comment on any of this, not even a tweet. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
And now let's hear about another kind of market. Individuals can buy local produce, one tomato at a time, at farmers markets, but for restaurants and schools, the process is not so simple. Beth Hoffman reports on a new website called Farms Reach that directly connects commercial buyers to local farms.
Nettie's Crab Shack is not at all a shack. The seafood restaurant is located on San Francisco's high-end Union Street and specializes in cooking with fresh local fish and produce.
Tell you quickly about our specials today. We're doing a really beautiful prawn salad. We serve that with some really beautiful heirloom tomatoes. They're coming from Cape Hay Farms right now.
These
really
are nice, not just fresh. Any tomatoes. They're organic Sun Gold tomatoes, picked by hand just a short time ago in the Cape Hay Valley of Northern California.
Actually, the tomatoes really help brighten up the whole dish. They have sweetness and tartness.
Meet Chef Brian Leitner. He used to spend a lot of time calling farms to get this kind of produce. Or he went shopping booth by booth at the farmer's market. But not anymore.
So I'm logging into Farms Reach.
A long list of produce from farms all around the Bay Area appears on Leitner's screen. One of them is Cape Bay Organics, a farm Leitner started buying from through the Farms Reach website.
Abundant supply of delicious heirloom tomatoes, some red brandywines, Cherokee purples.
Leitner clicks the boxes next to the produce he wants.
And then once I'm done ordering, I just click on here as place order, and it sends it directly to the farmer, and then I hope it shows up.
We are not attempting to give the opportunity for the general public, a consumer, the opportunity to buy directly from a farmer. They have that opportunity at a farmer's market.
That's Lena Holmes, the CEO of Farms Reach. Instead, she says, the website gives institutional buyers, like schools and restaurants, the ability to more easily buy food directly from nearby farms. That means more local food, she says, on more plates.
And the farmers have the opportunity to have an extremely expanded marketplace.
Out at Cape Bay Organics, about 90 miles away, Leitner's order arrives in the inbox of Fran Lewis, the sales manager at the farm.
So the order that came in, it says there's an order being placed by Brian at Nettie's Crab Shack. And what I would do is go into our computer system and enter this sale. And now our farm workers know that they need to harvest these items, pack these items, and get them on a truck tonight. And then it'll go to the restaurant the next morning.
For Lewis, before Farms Reach, even finding restaurants to order produce was tricky business.
I would say a year ago, every afternoon, I was calling between 10 and 20 restaurants, just blind calling them. I would look online, and sometimes I would Google, like, organically friendly restaurants. And sometimes it was really successful, but it was hit or miss.
Although Farms Reach has by no means replaced the cold calls yet, it is doing part of Lewis's work for her, bringing clients to Cape Bay via the website. And because she spends less time sitting at her desk, randomly calling restaurants, Lewis now travels out to the fields to get to know her product better.
Sun Gold is almost like when they hit the peak of sugar. It's just a beautiful, deep, setting sun orange.
Those same golden cherry tomatoes are then delivered to Nettie's Crab Shack, not 24 hours after they were picked.
Hi there. How you doing? Right here or?
And not 4 hours later, they're served as part of the restaurant's daily special.
Clam chowder for you.
Thank you very much.
And here's the grilled prawn salad.
Well, thank you.
Heirloom tomatoes, a little fennel chili vinaigrette.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Farms Reach launched in the Bay Area last spring and plans to expand to 7 other regions around the country. For NPR News, I'm Beth Hoffman in San Francisco.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block, and it's time now for All Tech Considered. Today, technology and the language barrier. Imagine you're in a job that puts you face-to-face with customers. What would you do or say when someone asks you something but doesn't ask in English? Now, imagine being able to pick up a phone and connect to an interpreter in just about any language. Hospitals have long used such services, and they're gaining traction in all kinds of industries. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
At a Rite Aid store in Northern Virginia, the pharmacist has to tell a Spanish-speaking client why the insurance company won't automatically pay for a certain cough medicine. So they each step to a telephone on the counter.
Welcome to Language Line Services.
For Spanish, press 1.
This phone looks like any other, except it has two handsets, one for the pharmacist and one for the customer. The pharmacist, herself foreign-born, describes the problem.
They pay for only 3 days until the doctor calls insurance for prior authorization.
The customer listens on his handset as a trained medical interpreter explains. Rite Aid has just signed up for phone interpretation in all its stores, but is testing these dual handsets in only a couple dozen. Company official Scott Jacobson says their advantage is allowing pharmacist and client to stand face to face.
Oftentimes, you know, body movement can speak across that foreign barrier as well, so it tends to help.
This spring in New York State, 7 pharmacy chains were forced to boost language access after a civil rights complaint. But as the country's large immigrant workforce heads into old age with all its aches and maladies, Rite Aid hopes that doing this nationally makes good business sense.
When companies speak to them in language, they're 4 times more likely to buy a good or a product or a service from that company.
That's Louis Provenzano, head of Language Line, one of the largest phone interpretation services. Each call is routed to one of its 8,000 interpreters posted around the globe.
Currently, we're providing 176 languages across 18 different time zones.
Clients include police departments, insurance companies, banks, and government agencies. By logging their calls, Language Line can actually track migration.
We're able to issue alerts for our clients in any given city or any part of the country to show demographic changes.
The average cost for phone interpretation is about $1.40 a minute. Some businesses have been cutting back during the recession. At the Virginia Rite Aid store, one customer said he thought the system was a good idea, but he didn't have time to fiddle with the phone, so he stuck with his broken English. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News.
A new development in the law of unintended consequences. Car companies have tried to make gas-powered cars drive more quietly, and a lot of them do now. But there are also worries that some of the new car models are so quiet they could actually be dangerous. Nissan and General Motors will release battery-powered cars next year that make almost no noise. But technological achievement often comes with an uncontemplated cost. The Washington Post reports this week that the federal government is concerned about the practical effect of all that silence on the roads. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration worries that cyclists and pedestrians, especially people who are visually impaired, could be at risk. They've been trained to rely on the sounds of approaching traffic to tell them when it's safe to cross a street. So some manufacturers are searching for new ways to put sound into their vehicle for safety's sake. Nissan is testing out chimes or whistling melodies, but, you know, sounds are what we do for a living. Why not alert pedestrians with this sound? That ought to keep people out of the crosswalks.
Interactive television is a marketing term, perhaps a marketing dream, that's been around for years. The idea is that if couch potatoes see something they like in a commercial, they can click on their remote to buy it. That idea is becoming more of a reality. In the first large-scale rollout, a New York cable company next week will offer an early version of this service to its digital subscribers. Jesse Baker has more from New York.
It was supposed to be the Jennifer Aniston effect, back when Friends was still on NBC.
Well, excuse me, my fashion-impaired friends. I am here to tell you that hats are back.
Aniston was the trend-setting, haircut-inspiring Rachel Green. The idea was that viewers could see her wearing a sweater or a skirt they liked and use their TV remotes to buy it. The idea never quite materialized before Friends went off the air, but the promise of interactive TV still lingers. The media giant Cablevision next week is rolling out to millions of its cable subscribers interactive commercials.
With a simple push of the select button, get coupons, information, and even free samples delivered right to your door. Optimum Select, coming this fall from IOTV.
We made a conscious effort to not oversell and not overpromise what Optimum Select can do.
That's Cablevision's Gemma Toner.
And as part of our marketing strategy, we actually are truly delivering the products so that when they press select, we're not telling them they can get a coupon. We are actually delivering that coupon to them.
Just to be clear, you can't actually buy products off these commercials just yet. You can ask for more information or request a free sample of things like Benjamin Moore paint. It is one of a handful of national brands airing interactive ads across 25 cable networks in the greater New York area. Sam Craig is a marketing professor at New York University, and he thinks these types of ads would most appeal to a certain kind of viewer.
Someone that you'd categorize as an impulsive person. Someone that's very deliberate, that takes time to make decisions, is not going to respond to something on the television.
And Craig says, imagine how much product QVC could push if shoppers could just hit a purchase button on their remotes.
J140434 is the item number. Stay in the line for that one, and we're going to go right into the earrings that you could wear with it.
Interactive marketing seems destined to appeal to the infomercial clientele. You know, the same people who would order a Snuggie for their dog?
So how do you keep your dog warm when they're feeling a chill? Now there's Snuggie Dog, the little blanket with sleeves designed to fit your dog.
Cablevision would love for you to just press a button on your remote and buy a Snuggie. But that's not where they are yet. And Cablevision's Gemma Toner says don't expect these commercials to revolutionize the advertising world. For now, she's happy with interactive baby steps.
But I think in the beginning, we should just be realistic and conscious of how consumers are thinking about this and how they react to it.
Cablevision's first big challenge, though, will be reprogramming consumers' relationships with their remotes. So when you see a commercial, learning to press the select button and resisting the urge to hit fast forward. For NPR News, I'm Jesse Baker in New York.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. If you like sitting in cafes with wireless, enjoying a coffee, and free internet access for as long as you like, that may be getting harder. Small independent cafes are introducing stricter policies to save money while times are tight. They're trying to get more turnover at their tables, as Sarus Farivar reports from Oakland, California.
I'm a freelancer, which means I work at home a lot. When I don't want to work at home, this is where I go, Hudson Bay Cafe. It's a cozy coffee house just a few blocks from home. There's good coffee, a nice atmosphere, and of course, free Wi-Fi. On any given day, there's at least half a dozen people here who are tapping away on their laptops. When I first started coming, they gave me, or anybody, the code for the Wi-Fi network. It was valid for days at a time, but now that's changed.
We've got to turn the tables just like a restaurant does in order to be able to survive.
Owner Sadri Majlessi says too much Wi-Fi is bad for business.
We used to lose customers because they couldn't sit down. Because every single table is taken and every single outlet was taken, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, they're not going to get a cup of coffee just because I'm here, right?
Now the code changes much more frequently. You can't even get it unless you spend $3. But Majlessi isn't the only cafe owner that's changing the way he runs his Wi-Fi. Last year at Nadri's Cafe and Coco Bar in New York, managers started covering up power outlets and limiting the use of Wi-Fi during lunch hours. In Seattle, where they set coffee trends for the whole country, one cafe has had their Wi-Fi on only during weekdays. But other cafe owners aren't sure if Wi-Fi is hurting their business all that much. This summer, Coffee Bar in San Francisco's Potrero Hill neighborhood put up a couple signs asking laptop users to make room for customers who were spending more money. But owner Jason Paul says ultimately it wasn't worth it.
We can sit here and laugh at the guy who comes up and gets 5 refills of hot water, but at the end of the day, he's not going to make or break our business.
Plus, he adds that most of his customers are good Wi-Fi citizens and know when they're abusing the network. For me, though, there's only one place that offers reliable Wi-Fi, my home office. At least I know I won't restrict my own use or kick myself out. For NPR News, I'm Cyrus Farivar in my home office in Oakland.